Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. This week, Tom Hurley talks to Una Kearse and Dan Minchin about the Lady Lansdowne, the world's oldest surviving iron paddle steamship. Niamh Riley brings us a report on last weekend's Ocean to City Maritime Festival. We have news of the Juan Sebastian de Elcano, which visits Dublin this weekend. Last weekend, the members of the World Ship Society hosted a visit by a very special writer and visitor aboard the Cunard Line's The Queen Victoria. He's a native of Hoboken, New Jersey, and is known as Mr. Cruise Liner, an international authority on ocean liners and cruise ships. He is maritime historian Bill Miller.
Well, you know, I was very lucky. Back in the 1950s, I grew up as a boy on the banks of the Hudson River, and I looked over at the New York City skyline, but in between were all the great liners coming and going, and of course the cargo ships as well, but the liners were fascinating. They were the leading ladies of a big production to me, and we used to have shipping schedules in the New York Times, and we had the New York Herald Tribune, so I used to plot my movements after school and on Saturdays and watch the liners sail by. Marcus, more people are traveling by sea today than ever in history. Alone, there are 15 million people taking cruises every year. The British cruise market is one of the biggest in the world, the German cruise market. People are realizing that ships offer wonderful holidays on floating hotels. I wrote my first book about 40 years ago. I started writing articles for the World Ship Society in the 60s, and then I said I should write a book. And I did in 1972, and it's 85 books since then about every aspect of liners and sometimes New York Harbor. And in the late 70s, P&O on the old Oriana was running a cruise to America with a stop in New York. Cruise to the New World, they called it. And I wrote over and said, would you like a guest speaker? No, they said, we don't have guest speakers. But a week later, they changed their mind and they invited me, and that was the start. And now I do 200 days a year lecturing on ships. About ships. Marcus, for example, on this cruise, we've been to Edinburgh and Greenock and Liverpool and Dublin. And now I'm sailing later this week on the Queen Mary back to New York with a stop in Halifax, Nova Scotia. So yes, and another big bonus is you get to meet a lot of interesting people. On this trip, I've just been chatting with a man who is now 85. He was a bellboy on the Queen Mary in 1950, earning £3 a month. Well, the port would have to be, I'm sorry to say this for you, but is New York, because that's where my roots are and the great history and the visions I have. But I used to love to go, and I still do. I love to go to Southampton and Hamburg, ports like that. A favorite ship? Well, I'm a little political. My favorite ship's the one I'm on at the moment. Now, the topics I've done this trip were the floating palaces, 100 years of Atlantic liners. Then I did the 1950s and 60s as the jet arrived and took that business away. And I did a review of some of the more famous liners and life aboard and what happened to them. And then tomorrow, which is our last sea day before we get back to Southampton, we go to Guernsey, then Southampton, I'm doing the evolution of the cruise industry, where you go to places for fun. It's safer to be on a cruise liner by far than to be in your car on the motorway. Right after breakfast, you go ashore. You can go on your own, walk around, or take a tour and see the highlights. It whets the tongue to come back. And occasionally, you even have 2 days in a port, an overnight. There's a book that I did for a London publisher called Ocean Liners of the Golden Age, and it was published about 10 years ago, and it's a collection of wonderful black and white photographs of the liners of the 20s and 30s that we found in a basement archive in New York, and a week later would have been tossed out by relatives of the man who died who owned them. And we saved them, cleaned them up, and made a beautiful book out of it. It's funny, Marcus, because I never wanted to be a seaman, but I wanted to be on ships, probably as a passenger. And there were two things. My grandmother took me on my first cruise 54 years ago. So that gave me a bug there. I was still a bit of a schoolboy, later school years. And number two, I had a lot of those school teachers, those maiden ladies that used to hop on ships for the summer holidays and go around the world or tour the Mediterranean. I thought, what a wonderful combination to be a teacher and a traveler. So I was a teacher for 32 years and then traveled. And in my early days, Marcus, I saved my pennies and went traveling by myself, you know, bought tickets, took cargo ships, banana boats, container ships, the liners. It was affordable. It wasn't cheap, but it was affordable. You could do it. The wildlife, the marine life that you see, the whales, the penguins, Antarctica, and of course the beautiful times of day, the sunsets and the beautiful occasions that you can't forget, the midnight sun or 24 hours of daylight in Norway and things like that. I was just last year in Greenland in the middle of winter, Norway in the middle of winter, to see the magnificent northern lights. They're immortal ships, the Titanic, even a bit more than the Lusitania. It just goes on and on with books and research and documentaries and films. And I was on the 100th anniversary cruise 2 years ago, and it was amazing. All the passengers were fascinated about the Titanic, and some of them had encyclopedic knowledge, even greater than mine, about that ship and every rivet and every soul on board. And of course, next year is the 100th anniversary of the Lusitania, and she, of course, sailed from here. There. The big Ruby Princess is here with 3,000 passengers. And I want to also mention that the liner Celtic was wrecked here back in 1928, which is part of ocean liner history. And she couldn't be freed, and she had to be broken up right on the spot. I will be on Cunard's 175th anniversary cruise when the three queens are in Liverpool together all at the same time. And I'm also booked for the July 2015 sailing of the Queen Mary II, which is retracing 175 years later, Liverpool, Halifax, Boston, New York, the first voyage Cunard ever made, being recreated 175 years later.
You never get tired about talking about cruise liners and ships, do you?
I never do, Marcus, and I think the ships keep me going. They're my little angels that watch over me and say, you keep us alive and we'll keep you going, Bill.
The voice there of Bill Miller, maritime historian. He's also curator of the 20th century maritime history at Manhattan's South Street Seaport Museum. You can read more about Bill Miller and his thoughts on his visit to Cove last weekend on the Seascapes webpage. Our thanks to Oliver Hawes and the members of the World Ship Society. Next here on Seascapes, to our competition. We said you could win a copy of Ireland's Western Islands by John Carlos, courtesy of the Collins Press, and we asked you to tell us in what city John Carlos was born. The postcards and emails came flooding in, and out of those who correctly answered Galway, our three lucky winners are Geraldine McCann in the Curragh of Kildare, Paddy Coyle in Castleknock in Dublin, and John Sullivan on Bear Island in West Cork. After last week's visit to Dublin Port by tall ships, the pride of the Spanish Navy, their sail training vessel, the Juan Sebastian de Elcano, is tied up in Dublin from this Saturday. We have photos and details of visiting times to the Elcano on the Seascapes webpage, www.rte.ie/radio1/Seascapes. The Elcano is a 113 metres long, four-masted schooner, the third largest tall ship in the world. It was built in Cadiz in 1928 and has visited 152 ports in more than 70 countries. Next here on Seascapes, Tom Hurley is in Killaloe on the trail of the Lady Lansdowne. Tom spoke to Dan Minchin, an aquatic alien species specialist and local historian Una Kearse, on the pier at Killaloe. The Lady Lansdowne is the world's oldest surviving iron paddle steamship. The wreckage lies submerged underneath Lough Derg Marina.
Well, we're on the pierhead where the Lady Lansdowne left over a number of years from 1834 up until the 1860s, as far as we know. She was 140 metric tons, and she was 130 feet in length and 17 feet in the beam. And she was built in Birkenhead in 1833, and the sections of her then came across by sea to Dublin on the night service on the passenger steamer that time. And then sections of it were put onto barges, which brought which were brought down to Shannon Harbour, and from there by barge came down to Killaloe, where there was a wet dock specially built for her to be to have the pieces assembled. And accompanying her were 20 men who knew what they were doing, and some boys, about six boys, I think.
I suppose it was the world's first iron ship with watertight bulkheads, and because it was an iron ship, it could float in shallower waters than wooden ships. So that was very, you know, important here on the River Shannon and at Lough Derg. Well, it's surviving underwater because it's been submerged since the 1860s, just at Culna and Ballina, more or less just past the Lakeside Hotel.
It was one of the first wrought iron vessels to be built that became a paddle steamer.
Do we know how long it took to build it once the parts were brought to Killaloe?
Well, we know it was built in 1833, but it was 1834 before it was launched. And it could tow four barges, so it carried livestock and goods and passengers.
It was the most efficient form of transport at that particular time. And people from Limerick on the flyboat would come up the canals to the pierhead in Killaloe and join the Lady Lansdowne at 9 o'clock in the morning. And then the Lady Lansdowne would leave and call into Williamstown, which is on the west side of Lough Derg, about halfway up, and then arrive in Portumna. And she'd return the same day, and she did this 6 days a week, Sunday being the exception. Once the locks at Meelik and Athlone were built, she made her maiden voyage in 1849 up to Athlone. She was carrying passengers, cattle, but also she towed barges, up to four barges, as Una indicated. And one of the main products that was actually brought up river was the slate from the quarries at Portroux. At the time, there were about 300 to 400 men. It's difficult to believe now, but 300 to 400 men working in the quarries at that particular time. And the slate was widely accepted, not just in Ireland, but in Britain as well.
Do we know what kind of fuel it ran on? Like, was it coal or peat or what?
It was peat initially, and you can actually see the areas where the peat was excavated near Coos Bay and up near Rossmore, which is on the Woodford River on the west side. But then they used coal because this was much more efficient and it didn't take up quite so much room. And they were able to get steam up much quicker with the coal. So that's why the coal ultimately became the main fuel. You can see the clinker. In the samples I get from the lake, you can pick up the clinker that was probably used by the Lady Lansdowne.
It was discovered submerged in 1957 here beside the Lakeside Hotel. And a mineral bottle containing two names was found in it. One name said John McAvoy, Killaloe, and the other John Brosnan, Killaloe.
And what led to its demise?
Well, I suppose its main work was in the days before railways. So the railways came to this area in the 1860s, and that would have, you know, that would have seriously damaged the trade or the need for that type of steamer then.
Because it wasn't being used, it appears that these two particular men who left their names on the bottle might have been watchmen. But it's not clear if the boat was scuttled or whether she just sank, just filling with water over time. But she lies adjacent to the Derg Marina on the Ballina side of the Shannon River at the lower end of Lough Derg now.
Back in the 1970s when the river level was reduced by the ESB for ESB reasons, part of it was exposed.
It's about 3 metres depth where it is now, and the water levels have varied over time. But most of the vessel is actually underwater now, but part of it was exposed at one time. But she may have been slightly moved because I actually heard that although she is entire in terms of her frames, she has been partly damaged amidships and she's slightly skewed now. And we're not clear whether this is as a result of additional work that took place at the time of the expansion of the marina.
Okay. In 1967 it was examined and the main frame and bulkheads were intact. Much of the outer plating and all of the decking superstructure, boiler, engine and paddle wheels were missing.
There was a porthole that was given to the Heritage Centre here in Killaloe, and I went to look for it, and apparently it's in the possession of Shannon Development as far as I know, but I don't know who actually has it. It'd be very nice to have it returned to the Heritage Centre. It was recently surveyed as a result of a plan to develop some various buildings in the region of the marina. It wasn't quite clear to me whether the vessel was actually preserved at that particular stage, but we now have got confirmation from the Department of the Environment that it is now listed as a preserved wreck.
I understand there's pieces of it in, is it Liverpool Maritime Museum or something?
That is correct. Professor Davies, who has had an interest in this particular vessel for quite some time, he visited the area in the 1980s and dived on it, and he supplied me with a CD which was based on an 8mm film which was taken of the vessel, and I provided the CD to the Department of the Environment for storage.
And Una, now you have a piece of the actual ship.
I have a piece, just a piece of timber that was taken from it when it was exposed in the 70s.
Ah, that I didn't know.
I mean, you'll have to take our word for it that it's from the Lady Lansdowne, but taken circa 1974. It was exposed, and I think my father just took advantage of the situation and has a piece of it.
That's the first time I've seen that piece of timber. It's rather nice to have something that otherwise would have actually deteriorated in the meantime. So, nice to see.
There's a picture from the Pictorial Survey and Tourist Guide to Loch Derg by William Stokes from 1842. So here we can see it here, the paddle steamer at the pierhead.
There was talk a few years ago, I think, about salvaging it. How likely is that?
That's right. Camel Laird, they went out of business in 1993, but before this particular time in the 1970s, they were interested to raise it and bring it back to Birkenhead and have it on display there. And this followed the survey by Professor Davies in 1967. And he had this in mind for some time, and eventually the money was available. He thought it wouldn't be too difficult to actually raise it at that particular time and put it on a low loader and bring it across to Birkenhead. But at the time, as you might recall, there were political problems with people being kidnapped, and he felt that the situation was insecure, so he didn't go ahead with this particular project. So he had actually looked at the possibility of raising it, and it is possible to raise it, and it wouldn't cost too much money, according to him.
I suppose anything that would increase tourist traffic to the area would be welcome, and especially something of historical significance like the Lady Lansdowne. She's known about locally, certainly. Yes, we mightn't all know the detail that Dan knows, but she's certainly known.
Well, I have letters here from the Greenwich Maritime Museum, the University of Liverpool, the Society for Nautical Research, and I've got another one here, from Andrew Bocock, who is a historian, all indicating that they were concerned about the possibility of damage to this particular wreck at the time, and that they would be very pleased to see her raised and put on display, and they felt that this was a viable option.
Tom Hurley spoke to Una Kearse and Dan Minchin, and you can see and read more about the Lady Lansdowne on the Seascapes webpage. The annual Ross Moor and Ocean to City Maritime Festival was held in brilliant sunshine last Saturday. Niamh Riley went to sunny Crosshaven to meet some of the teams taking part in the gruelling race. She also spoke to two of the winning teams. This year was the biggest race in its 10-year history. Eddie English of Sail Cork talked to Seascapes.
I'm on race control of the Ocean to City race on Ross Moor, and we have an excellent day for it. Sun is shining. Nice breeze there, but it's not too much. It'll keep people cool, but it's not going to cause us any major problems. We have 170 odd competitors. We have about 30 safety boats looking after them on this marathon course, which will take them out to the mouth of Cork Harbour, in past Spike and Cove, up past Monkstone Passage, up then through Loch Mahon to Black Rock and into Cork City. So the first boats are going to start at about 1:30, and then the rest of the starts are happening for the next hour and a half after that. The first boats we anticipate will finish around 4:00.
Coordinating 170 boats is no easy task and is a responsibility taken seriously by the organisers.
I'm Ross Kenny and I'm the youth race coordinator. So a lot of the stuff that happens on the water goes through me in one way or another. Over the last couple of months, I suppose, a lot of my time has been spent training youth crews, getting them ready for the race today, and then just being involved in whatever needs to happen in the workshop, and then everybody kind of mucks in the last couple of weeks for Ocean to City just to make it happen. At the end of the day, it happens with employees, but it happens with volunteers, and without the volunteers, it wouldn't happen. And the amount of work that they put in kind of inspires us to put in the long hours as well. And I suppose it's only for a couple of weeks leading up to the event where the long hours and, you know, the week of the event, okay, we put a lot of effort in, but the reward is more than worth it, you know.
Some people race to compete, some for the love of the sport, but others participate for something more.
We formed in order to raise money for Arc House, which is a cancer support house in Cork. We pulled together three companies and we created a name called Croí Chróga, which means brave heart in Irish. So what we want to do is we actually want to raise money for a fantastic cause and have fun at the same time. So the thing is, the Dragon boats, which are owned by Metal Mara, are actually given to the Cork Dragons for use. And the Cork Dragons are a breast cancer survivors dragon boat racing team which was formed last year. Arc House, which is a cancer support house, wanted to help them to get up and running. So this year, we all came together, which is Prince Clinic, Acklay Gym, and also Simply Suits, and we raised funds to support Arc House. And we raised over €2,500 already for them. So all proceeds, so the three companies have funded the entire back end of it. All proceeds are going to it. We've done 4 training sessions. We gave everything today. Nobody left anything behind on the boat. And we won our category of the Dragon Boat. Last year, we had a fantastic in the Cork Dragons, a breast cancer survivor called Tara Sheridan. And Tara passed away of breast cancer. Okay? And today on the boat, we carried an angel paddle for her. So that's her spirit that we brought on the boat with us. So that's kind of a full loop in that it's a breast cancer survivors team that supports them. And then today we're giving something back to them. Was it a tough race? It was absolutely tough because there's no keel on our boat. So any form of wave would cause us a problem. From time to time, people would swap sides. And when they're swapping sides, the boat can rock a little bit. One of our sponsors, Anla, didn't quite perfect the technique of swapping sides. And we nearly actually capsized it one side. But we were the third boat over the line. It was horrifically, it was fantastic. It was brilliant. And I want to say one special thanks to Oisin. There is but one helm in Cork that you should all try and have on your boat. And it's this man. He gives so much to the community. He gives so much to Mahal Mara. And we were delighted and honoured to have him on as our helm today. So Oisin,
well done. The only one who really didn't have to work very hard. They did all the paddling. I just steered the boat, really.
The participants range from individuals to clubs, some of whom have been in existence for hundreds of years.
Drink House is its 500th anniversary this year, so it started on the 20th of May 1514, so it's 500 years old.
We won the GOP category, and apparently they've had this category every year, but they've never had 5 entries, so you need 5 entries to make a category. So this year they've had 5 GOP boats and we've won it. And apparently we would have won it all the other years had they had 5.
We have a crew, well, it's a 6-man boat, but we have a crew of about 15 people. So we have 6 rowers in the boat, a cox, and then a couple of subs, and all the wives and girlfriends. So we're like the England football team with our wags. So yeah, it's a great crew.
The boat is about 2 weeks old. Cork Ocean City is the first event it's taken part in, so it's a lot of firsts today. First win in Cork, first ocean going boat we've had with Trinity House, and we've replaced our old boat after 15 years. And this is a much sleeker boat for the or 500. So we've got 6 people. The cox today was Eileen McGrath, and she's from Middleton. Oh, sorry, Carrigaline. I'm from Farnley originally. So we've had 2 Cork people in the boat, which is good. And to win today is fantastic. We had a really good start. We obviously done the ocean route. we got down to Spit and had a bit of trouble turning because there was a lot of kayaks in the way that obviously didn't know where they were going. So we pushed those out of the way. But Loch Mahon it's the bane of all lives. And today, I think everybody got struck by Loch Mahon. At some point, it felt like there was a magnet on the knee just holding us back. But once we got to Blackrock Castle, we were away again, and it was fine. But, Loch Mahon almost killed us. But, yeah, it's a tough race. It's the best event we do, because we do a lot of events in London. We've done 15, 16 Great River Race events, and Cork just outshines it. Leaps and bounds, safety wise, the crack, everybody cares. And when the race finishes, people come up and genuinely, like yourself, ask how you've done. Whereas at other events, that just doesn't happen. You've done the event, they've taken your money, and well done, Ocean City.
That report from On Ross Moor by Niamh Riley for Seascapes. Fastnet Maritime and Folk Festival takes place in Ballydehob next weekend from Friday, June the 13th to Sunday the 15th, with shanty singers from Norway, England and Ireland taking part, plus maritime storytelling from Shanachie Eddie Lenehan. Shanty singers include Rigor Loftus from Norway, The Shanty Crew, Hooks and Crooks, Dick Miles and these two fine singers, Pat Sheridan and Jim McGeehan.
Ye manners all, as you pass by, come in and drink, if you are dry. Come spend me, lads, your money brisk, and pop your nose in a jug of this. Ye manners all, if you've half a crown, you're welcome all for to sit down. Come spend me, lads, your money risk, and pop your nose in a jug of this. Ye tipplers all, as ye pass by, come in and drink, if you are dry. Come in and drink, think not amiss, and pop your nose in a jug of this.
The sound of Mariners All with Pat Sheridan and Jim McGeehan. There's also a maritime songwriting competition sponsored by IMRO on Saturday the 14th at 3 p.m. in Vincent Collins Bar. You can contact Dick Miles at dickmiles77@gmail.com. Next week, here on Seascapes, Kieran Devaney on the Lighthouse on Tory Island. Hugh Oram on the coverage of a yachting event in Dublin Bay by Marconi in 1898, the first sports event on radio. We hope to catch up with Derry skipper Sean MacArthur as the Clipper race prepares to leave New York for Derry. And Conor Moles, head of the National Maritime College of Ireland, on the recent major contract signed with Chevron Shipping. All that and much more here on Your Maritime Programme. Until next Friday night, tight lines, fair sailing.